I think that the military is a bit perplexed on how to handle this. They didn't expect to have these massive protests, for sure.
We have the latest on the military takeover of Myanmar. This is Wednesday, February 17th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, Google will pay an Australian company for its news. A move by the World Health Organization could expand COVID vaccination worldwide. We explore the now blurred line between politics and entertainment. That and more on today's VOA Asia. Nationwide protests continue Tuesday in Myanmar despite a shutdown of the internet for a second consecutive night. Protesters blocked off the street in front of the country's central bank in Yangon despite the increasing presence of military vehicles on the street the day before. Dozens of Buddhist monks took part in Tuesday's protest marches in Yangon. Phil Robertson is Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's Asia Division. I spoke with him from Bangkok, where he's been following the happenings in Myanmar.
We've seen very little violence so far. I mean, we've seen a number of cases where police have used excessive force and lethal force. There was overnight some violence against protesters up in the north in Kachin State and Michina, where they surrounded a power plant. They were concerned that the military might shut off the electricity. The military then fired rounds in the air and may have used rubber bullets against the protesters as well. But we still see people going out on the street in very significant numbers every day. The protests are continuing. The so-called civil disobedience movement, or the CDM, is expanding with more and more people refusing to go to work. And I think that, the message to the Myanmar military from the people of Myanmar is, hey, we're not going to go along with this. We're not going to allow you to drag us back to the years of military dictatorship. We had five decades of that, and we're not going back.
In your opinion, are these protests having an effect on the military as far as how they react to them?
Well, I think that the military is a bit perplexed on how to handle this. They didn't expect to have these massive protests, for sure. What they expected was they were going to be able to lock up a number of the NLD leaders, including Aung San Suu Kyi, run them into sort of made-up court trials, sentence them, perhaps bar the party, and then basically rig the rules so that the next time they have an election, the military wins. The mass opposition that has come up so quickly is something that I think the military is still grappling with. What they're doing is they're busy amending laws to give them more legal weapons. For instance, changes to the penal code that are going to allow for 20 years imprisonment for obstructing the military or causing problems for the security forces. A possible cybersecurity law, which is a despot's dream, something that really is among the worst we've seen in quite some time. And other actions to try to create a legal toolbox that they will be able to use to arrest and imprison significant numbers of people. And we're seeing also a widening dragnet. Now over 420 people have been arrested since the coup. That includes National League for Democracy legislators, elected members of parliament, various government officials, but also civil society activists, a number of journalists, a number of Buddhist monks, and others. And we expect that those numbers to continue to climb.
The United States, I believe, is still the only nation to have applied sanctions after this coup. Why is that?
Well, I think the U.S. Moved quicker than most. The United States, in the form of the Biden administration, was very quick off the start. It is an action to have targeted sanctions against top military leaders and also against some of the military companies that operate in Burma under the control of the military and pour their profits back into the military. But we also understand that the European Union will be meeting this coming week amongst its member states to discuss sanctions, and we expect that there will be progress made there. And, of course, New Zealand has also done the needful in terms of travel bans and ending assistance to the military government as well.
There had been reports that Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi was to be tried Tuesday after she was detained by the military coup that had put her into detention in her residence, but that didn't happen.
The latest we heard today was a surprise start to their trial. Originally, Aung San Suu Kyi's lawyer had been informed on Monday that the start of the trial would be postponed to Wednesday. However, today he learned, much to his surprise, that the trial was proceeding. By the time he got to the court, it was already over. It was basically an hour-long video session. And what we learned was Suu Kyi is not only charged with the importing walkie-talkies charge, which is ludicrous, and in fact, those walkie-talkies belong to her security detail from the Ministry of Home Affairs, which is run by the military, but also that she's been hit with a second charge under the Natural Disaster Act, which is the law that is frequently used to prosecute people for violating COVID-19 restrictions. We don't know the exact parts of the charges of, you know, what she did, but this is the same charge that has been leveled against President Win Myint, that, you know, he basically greeted a group of supporters when they stopped by his residence. You know, it's ludicrous. I mean, this is just manufactured, you know, politically motivated charges that the junta is using against these two to keep them on ice. But the problem is that this trial may take 6 months to a year. So we expect that, you know, Suu Kyi and other top leaders are all going to be prosecuted on some ridiculous charges that will then be used to justify further actions against them.
China today seemed to step back a little bit as far as their support. There are some reports that China was supporting the coup, and now they're saying maybe no. What do you know about that?
Well, there's been a lot of chatter on social media in Myanmar, and I will say that the Twitter sphere in Myanmar has really taken off. I mean, it is growing exponentially day by day, alleging that China was behind the coup, China organized the coup, China is, you know, bringing in weapons, or China's bringing in internet blocking technology, you name it. The Chinese ambassador stepped out to say that, you know, they weren't happy with what has happened either, but that, you know, he and the Chinese government will deal with whoever's in place. The reality is that China did spend a lot of time reaching out to Aung San Suu Kyi when she was the head of government. They've also maintained relations, albeit somewhat mixed, with the military. China is prepared to deal with whoever in Myanmar is prepared to guard their economic interests, and that's particularly the Chinese-Myanmar Economic Corridor, which is a major Belt and Road Initiative project that the Chinese are funding. That's what matters to China. It's that their interests are preserved. And if their interests are preserved by the military, then I assume they're going to continue to defend the military at the UN Security Council and other international forums.
Phil Robertson, Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's Asia Division, joining us via Skype from Bangkok. The information technology giant Google has agreed to pay an Australian media company to host news material ahead of a planned mandatory bargaining code. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Google's deal with Seven West Media, which publishes the Perth-based West Australian newspaper and other titles, is the first of seven such arrangements the tech giant is expected to make in Australia. A law being introduced this week in federal parliament in Canberra would require large technology companies to pay to use Australian news stories. The legislation would make Australia the first country to force big tech firms to pay for news content. Google, which had called the law unworkable, and Facebook have threatened to downgrade their services to Australians or even walk away. They've argued that by using stories from other publishers, they generate more internet traffic for the websites run by traditional media outlets. But in an apparent softening of that stance, Google has reached an agreement with Seven West Media, reportedly worth $23 million a year. Belinda Barnett is a lecturer in media at Swinburne University of Technology, a public research university based in Melbourne. She believes it's a good result for the Australian company.
It does sound like they've come up with a fairly lucrative deal for them, around 30 million Australian, but that figure hasn't been confirmed yet. Seven West owns quite a lot of regional outlets as well, so it has the potential to benefit the regional news outlets that it owns and the journalists employed by them.
The Australian government said a deal with Facebook was very close. As their advertising revenues collapsed, traditional broadcasting and publishing companies have for years complained that social media platforms have benefited from their quality reporting without paying for it. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The World Health Organization announced Monday it has approved two versions of the AstraZeneca Oxford COVID-19 vaccine for emergency use, action that will boost global supplies in coming weeks. The WHO said the vaccines are safe for those 18 and older and will be distributed through the organization's COVAX vaccine sharing initiative targeting middle and low-income countries. The approval allows countries to speed up domestic regulatory approval to import and administer the vaccines. The line between politics and entertainment is increasingly blurred in America, where a former reality TV star recently served as president, and entertainment has become more political. The content people choose to watch and listen to reflects a politically divided country. And as VOA's Elizabeth Lee shows, the division often cuts across families.
Nate Padgett lives more than 2,000 kilometers away from his younger brother Hayden. Their political views are just as far apart.
We rarely see eye to eye on policy.
The brothers grew up in a Republican home, but when Nate came home from college during one holiday,
we got into an argument about politics, and that was when we all realized, he is not like us.
The brothers' opinions on entertainment mirror their political views. Nate, a Democrat, enjoys shows and music with themes he agrees with.
I don't necessarily seek out artists because of their political leaning, but I will say that I find myself gravitating towards like songs that have a political or social message that I agree with.
For programs on TV, Hayden Padgett does not like shows with an agenda.
Where I start to censor myself and what I watch is when I feel like I'm being preached to about politics.
But Hollywood is putting more social commentary in its shows, which becomes political, says University of Southern California professor Christina Bellantoni.
You're seeing a real effort to include diversity of storyline that has permeated shows that more people on the left watch. There are writers' rooms in LA who are attempting to do this and really influence that.
Sporting events have also seen infusions of politics.
Colin Kaepernick has become this lightning rod, whereas sports used to be a pretty unifying thing.
In 2016, American football player Colin Kaepernick kneeled during the national anthem to protest police brutality against minorities. Many professional players followed his lead.
I thought, great, that's really good.
My problem with Colin Kaepernick was not that he was kneeling. It was that he started kneeling and stopped playing well.
Political passions grew. Some protested Kaepernick's act of protest.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a off the field right now, out.
Donald Trump amplifies everything. He has from the very beginning. He's someone that understands mass media. He could motivate people to boycott or support something if they agreed with him politically.
And I frankly don't want either our sports players or our entertainers to really tell me their political opinions.
Bellantoni says a new president does not mean entertainment will be less divisive, especially when there are more ways of consuming content than ever before.
You can, vote your voice with your click of your remote control. The financial incentive for division is good for everyone. It's good for political consultants. It's good for social media companies.
She says many Americans who say they're tired of politics reinforce divisions with the choices they make.
Particularly when it comes to their own social circles and starting to associate more with people that have the same political views they do. And then that really narrows the focus of what they consume.
Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please be safe and enjoy the day ahead.